Do you remember the picture of my son? It won a Pulitzer Prize. The picture of him lying dead on the sidewalk at Columbine High School. His name is Daniel. My name is Brian Rohrbaugh. Did you know that the roots of the Columbine murder started back in 1967 when our Colorado lawmakers passed a law that allowed a baby to be put to death because her father was a criminal? In one evil law, they changed our country from a culture of life to a culture of death. Since that day, 50 million babies in this country have been killed through abortion. Will you stand with me? Will you stand in the place of just one of these victims? Join me as Colorado Right to Life presents the annual March for Life at the State Capitol, Saturday, January 21st at 1:30 p.m. I will share with you a story that few know. Join me, because abortion is always wrong.
Warning is to the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And, well, I had to bring in the heavy artillery to today's show into the studio because yesterday we were talking about little Dylan Walborn, 4-year-old boy who was starved to death over 24 days by his parents with the support and encouragement of Children's Hospital and a pastor at Victory Church. And during the discussion of Dylan's case, we got a call from a paramedic, Michael, who was supporting the starving to death of children like Dylan. Dylan had cerebral palsy, and basically saying it's okay to starve people to death when medical professionals think that's the right thing to do. And he thought that his medical expertise and his education would trump my ability to have a correct opinion on the matter. And he asked me if I had, how much medical education had I had, and I said, none, zero. And so I brought into the studio, and I thank you so much, Maria. Maria, you're a nurse.
Yes, I am.
You're a nurse for 10 years. What kind of a nurse are you? There's all different levels.
I have a bachelor's of science in nursing.
You're an RN then, a registered nurse.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And so how does that compare to a paramedic? Since we had Michael call in yesterday, the amount of education, medical knowledge, experience.
Well, I have 4 years of education, and I don't know how long paramedics go to school, but as far as I know, it's either an associate's degree, which is 2 years, or it's some type of certificate program.
All
and
right.
His experience is limited to seeing kind of trauma out in the field. It's not something that he carries into the hospital or long-term care of people.
Over a period of time. He sees people for minutes and hours.
Right.
And then you take those people who are brought to the hospital, and what kind of care, what is your background in these 10 years of work?
I've done hospice, I've done oncology, medical surgical nursing, I've done home health and long-term care.
Okay, so your areas of experience are exactly dealing with the kinds of issues we've been talking about with Terry Schiavo, for example, who was starved to death in Florida. Little Dylan Walborn, 4 years old, who had cerebral palsy, long-term care, home health. So you're familiar, and you worked hospice.
Right.
So could we do this? What I'd like to do, now we'll take phone calls starting in a moment at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278, 836-9278. But first, I'd like to play a half-minute clip of this paramedic who called in yesterday. His name is Michael, and we'll use that as a springboard to begin to talk about some of the arguments he made. Let's listen to yesterday's show from Michael.
And again, I'm a Christian, and I believe the same God you do, but there's just a time where you've got to let God do what he does.
Hey, Michael, when you starve someone to death, you're not letting God do what he does. You're killing the person.
Do you really think that's the only thing that Terry Schiavo had that she was hooked up to keep her alive?
Yes.
She had many machines.
Okay. All right. Well, now, just a brief clip. He was on for a while, and people could hear the whole call online at KGOV, our website, KGOV.com. But right there, he made two points. First, we should stop feeding people so that God can work. Could you respond to that before we get to Terry being hooked up to many machines?
Well, I don't see how that's letting God work at all, because in the New Testament, you see that there's a lot of lame and disabled people, and I didn't see God putting them out of their misery or any such sort.
Yeah, there were people with disabilities.
He's talking about intentionally taking food and water away from people, which we all need to live.
Yeah, if
ridiculous argument.
Yeah, if God is going to work, that would imply that God is going to intervene, whereas if you kill someone, that's human beings intervening.
Exactly.
So whether you shoot them or stab them to death or starve them to death, that's not God working. That's human beings working.
Exactly.
And killing somebody. And by the way, Margaret Sanger, the president and longtime president and founder of Planned Parenthood, she wrote a couple books, and Women in the New Race and A Pivot of Civilization. And in her books, she described the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame as, quote, the dead weight of human waste.
Or useless eaters, as they're termed.
Yeah. The dead weight, handicapped people, the dead weight of human waste. And Planned Parenthood still gives an annual award in the name of Margaret Sanger. They still honor her.
She's an evil woman.
Okay, so of course that was a non sequitur, his point. We should starve them to death so God can act.
Right.
It
makes no sense.
It's just a euphemism for we're going to kill the person, we're going to let God act. No, you're killing the person.
That just makes them feel better about what they're doing.
Yeah, the second part where he said Terri Schiavo was hooked up to many machines.
That's inaccurate, because in hospice there aren't many machines. He would be insinuating that she's either on dialysis or that she's on a ventilator. Some people are on bypass machines for their heart function. That doesn't occur in hospice. If you go to hospice, you're saying, I'm going to die in 6 months or less, that's certified by a doctor, and that you're willing to forego life-saving measures.
So that
is inaccurate, which tells me that he doesn't know anything about Terri Schiavo, and he's making, you know, innuendos based on what he's heard in the media.
Right.
I had multiple problems with his call.
And inaccurate. And with his, he's sort of refuting the argument he tried to make was, because I have medical experience and some education, I have a deeper insight, Bob, into these social issues, into these cases in the news, where in reality, when he hears reports, he heard that Terri Schiavo, she was in hospice for years.
5 years, which is inappropriate. The only reason she was in that hospice was because her husband's attorney, George Filos, was on the board of that hospice. That's the only way she got in. You cannot be in hospice for years and years and years.
Because you're not
dying.
Because
you have to be certified every 3 months. Every 90 days, you have to be certified.
That you're
once
dying.
Exactly. And if they certify you the third time, the hospice has to provide your care until you die. If that's 10 years, they have to pay for it.
So we're talking to Maria, who's a registered nurse, been in the field for over 10 years, background in hospice, long-term care, home health. And so there's a difference between people who are ill or disabled and people who are dying.
Right, which Mike can't seem to distinguish between those, which I found very disturbing in his phone call.
Yeah.
He stated that people who need to be continually cared for, well, what does that mean, continually cared for? He didn't qualify it, but when he kept talking about machines, it lets you know that that's where he's thinking, that people that are on ventilators, that they're being continually cared for. Well, we have people that I could break Bob's legs today, and he would be unable to get food. He said Terri should have got up and got herself food. Well, there are a lot of people that can't get food.
Well,
that's a ridiculous argument.
That was such an immature statement from here, a professional, a paramedic. And you know what? We got calls after that show from people who said, you know, That call was chilling, because here's a paramedic and he's bragging that he could make these life and death decisions. One woman said, my husband was on a feeding tube for 4 months because of a gallbladder operation that went bad.
Mm-hmm. And that happens. That's a short term.
Now he's recovered.
Exactly.
But what if this paramedic comes to a home and her husband fell, and he's going to make a life or death decision, and he sees the guy's on a feeding tube? Well, I'm Michael, the paramedic. I know that he should die.
Right. He has no right to make those decisions. Yeah. Although I got the impression from his call that he enjoyed making those decisions, because it gave him a certain level of power. And that's why he started out his call with trying to discredit you that you had no medical experience. That is a tactic of liberals, which makes me think that Michael is a liberal Christian, because he said he was a Christian.
Yeah.
But if he's liberal, in my experience, and you can see it all throughout the news, I have plenty to back me up on it, is that if you're liberal and Christian, your liberalism is going to trump your allegiance to God any day of the week. Same thing with liberal Jews.
Wow.
Their liberalism always trumps what they believe, and you could hear it in his call. He was talking about utilitarianism, where people are based on their personhood is based on what they're worth. Well, we have 2-year-olds we have to feed. We have people who have Alzheimer's that can't go get food.
What?
We have people that don't have, like someone like Dylan, who has cerebral palsy. He can't comprehend how to even take a bite and swallow.
All right. Now, let me get this at my speed here. A person's worth, their personhood is based on who they are, not based on what they can do. A utilitarian worldview would say if you can't feed yourself, mm-hmm. you don't have any personal worth. Therefore, you could be killed.
Right. Because you become a useless eater. Because yeah. it's supposed to be the greatest good for the greatest number, and we can't have the greatest good for the greatest number when you're totally dependent on somebody for your daily care.
Yeah, which, of course, infants are dependent,
exactly.
and even toddlers, and people in a coma. Right. Yeah, so
that was just a straw man argument.
And then
that
also the other argument, tragic, that he would make, that unless you have some kind of medical degree, your opinion on right and wrong is invalid.
Right.
As though only people – who have taken biology, which I've taken, but mm-hmm. not to get a medical degree. Only people who have taken biology can know right from wrong or when you're killing a person.
Right.
And he couldn't distinguish between killing someone mm-hmm. by starvation and letting a dying person die.
Right.
His degree has brought him to the point where he can't distinguish between a dying person dying and humans killing someone who's right. not dying.
And some of his experience, it may be that he gets a skewed view of what he sees because he's dealing with trauma mm-hmm. and really acute events compared to dealing with people that are disabled. That's a chronic event that could last their life.
Maria, by the way, thank you so much for coming in. And I guess your RN, your degree and your experience is trumping our paramedic.
Yeah, since he brought it up.
Since he brought it up. I mean, so just so that we can neutralize that issue.
Right. Another thing he said was that everyone in medicine doesn't distinguish between food and machines. And that's an incorrect view because we actually do that every day. We discuss with people, do they want ventilators if something happens to them while they're in our care? Do they want to be tube fed? We discuss those things with them. So it is distinguished because a tube feeding could be beneficial to many people. And it's not considered burdensome treatment, where a ventilator, if you have a metastatic cancer, is not going to help you. Because you're going to die anyway.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. I talked about that with Michael. If you're dying and you give someone who's dying food, it doesn't work. It's not going to keep them alive.
No, but it keeps them comfortable. Because in a lot of instances, people that are dying, that it's taking more than a few days to die, where it can take the 6 months.
Oh, right.
If, like that lady that called yesterday from Porter, if they don't get something to eat, they can have problems. Now, people with cancer are different. I'd have to say that. Because they have had this cancer sometimes for 10, 15 years. And because of chemotherapy and radiation, their appetite has gone way down. Mm-hmm. They're not interested in eating. And they're slowly shutting down.
Right.
So to force them to eat, you know, it doesn't happen very often. They choose not to eat.
Well,
and that's different.
The pro-life community is not saying we're going to shove food into a body. That's not the position. When people are dying, some people lose their appetite. And some people, they're dying. They were in trauma, in an accident, car accident, massive heart attack, advanced cancer, and they're dying, and in the last couple few days, they don't want to eat,
right.
and they don't eat, and they die. That's okay.
Right, and I actually had a patient that I got when I came on shift. They said she was hospice and that she failed her swallow evaluation, which means that when she took something to drink, she was aspirating, was getting in her lungs. That's
right.
what they say. Well, I called the doctor because she had an order to not have anything to eat, and she was awake, and I thought that was wrong, and I said, well, if she's on hospice, let's just feed her anyway. She actually got better, went to a rehab center, and went home.
Maria, that's tremendous.
I know. And she actually did thank me for doing that because nobody had fed her.
Wow. And so.
So what, should we have let God work and let her die?
Right. And that's the difference between heroic efforts of medical care versus food and water.
This whole thing is ridiculous. And the thing with Terry, they were saying that she was very expensive to care for. How so? A few cans of food a day, 4 or 5 cans put into a tube
right.
and water, is not very expensive.
And her family
was willing to care for her.
Right, for
the whole
free.
Thing. And if Michael was doing his homework, when he heard about Terry, he could have looked up on the internet and found her website and saw a picture of Terry and saw that she was not on machines. He could have seen that in the picture.
Right. But
he didn't do his homework.
But the facts are a bit disturbing for him because he wants to justify the medical community, which was almost universally supportive of starving Terry to death.
Yes, they were. And I've had that discussion at work several times.
Yeah, as was our legal community.
Exactly.
As were all the Republican judges from George Greer mm-hmm. on up through the 11th Circuit to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Virtually all the Republicans all six of the Republicans on the 11th Circuit nominated by George Bush Sr., by Ronald Reagan, by George W. Bush, all of their judges voted to kill Terri Schiavo,
right.
All of them.
Right.
And so the medical community and the legal community is pretty much on board with starving people to death.
Right.
And now we have Victory Church in Westminster on Sheridan in the North Denver area, senior pastor Mike Ware. And one of their pastors was featured in this article by the Denver Post approving of Dylan's parents starving him to death. And reasons given throughout the lengthy article were reasons like, well, he was having more bad days than good days.
Well, I have those too. Are you going to put me out of my misery?
Wow, that's a good point. And they gave all these arguments, and they were so superficial and
right.
So tragic. And so now, not only is our legal community and the medical community, but the religious community, even of the churches you would consider evangelical or fundamentalist, even these churches, like Victory, what is that? That's a charismatic Pentecostal church. These churches are not getting the moral teaching they need from our national Christian ministries. They're being taught to be legal positivist and that we could regulate the murder of the innocent.
Right.
And so when there's a difficult situation, we could regulate this and we could say, you know, since we've tried all other medical alternatives, we can now starve Dylan Walborn to death.
Right. But I think there's more to it than just that. I think that there is a whole entire, our society in general, because we're so pampered in America, does not want to suffer in any way, shape, or form. They don't see any kind of benefit from suffering. That's why you'll hear an argument where it's better to abort that baby than see it abused. Mm-hmm. There's an argument that's used because we don't want suffering. So I see this all the time at work where, and I had to pick on your age group, where baby boomers will not want to deal with suffering. That person's suffering is bothering them, and so they want that person out of the way, like Terri was.
Mm-hmm.
She was bothering people. She went from being very beautiful in a short period of time to looking mentally retarded.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody wants to be like that. That's always the argument. I don't want to be like that. Well, nobody wants to be like that. That's just like the anti-war. Well, nobody wants war. Nobody wants cancer. I could run around saying I'm anti-cancer. That's a dumb argument.
Right, right.
Nobody says I grow up. I hope when I grow up, I'm going to be disabled like that.
So that when people say, well, look at Dylan's suffering, of course he suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are caring for him, they're also suffering.
Exactly.
And so there is that blurring then of motives. The mom felt peace and relief.
Mm-hmm.
And she could say, of course, for him.
Right.
I'm relieved for him, but you're also relieved for yourself.
Right.
Because if you've done hospice and long-term care, home health, it takes over your life that you now are living in order to care for this other person. And that's what God calls us to do. God calls us to do that, not to say when it becomes overly burdensome or when you think that it's too much for one party or another, then kill the person.
Exactly.
You solve the problem.
Well, and even that article you read about Dylan, the grandmother said that he brought her joy, but she was willing to go ahead and destroy him.
Right.
People that are disabled bring out the best in us sometimes and sometimes the worst.
Wow.
And it's hard being a nurse to watch people suffer. I feel helpless sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to kill them.
Well, if people are suffering and say they're in hospice, and what kind of painkiller? You use morphine, a morphine drip?
We use morphine.
And
we use the drips a lot, but I think they're used inappropriate, which is what we had initially decided we were going to talk about. I think there's some things in hospice care that are bordering on euthanasia that are very disturbing.
Well, we hear that from people around the country. When we do shows like this, people call up with their own personal stories of how their grandmother or mom or dad was killed intentionally. And that's their opinion that that's happening. We have a de facto euthanasia. In fact, this Denver Post article about Dylan Walborn, that article, Children's Hospital, said they have an ethics committee, and maybe half a dozen times a year they make a decision on a child to stop feeding him. They evaluate those cases. But most of the time, the doctors just make those decisions on their own. They don't even bring those cases to the ethics committee, which tells us, and that's just one hospital, and it's a children's hospital of all places. So obviously, euthanasia has become a de facto standard in American medical practice.
Well, but we have the medical practice aborting people. And if you have them on a base on a daily basis willing to kill some people, you can't expect they're not going to kill other people.
Yeah, so they if they kill them on the early end of the spectrum of life.
Not on the end.
Why not on the end?
And they'll use the thing of, oh, they're costing so much. And, you know, that if you look in Oregon, you have people that really feel that they have a duty to die.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be a burden to their family, which unfortunately the people that I have heard that have had that physician-assisted suicide have said that they feel when they have a friend that takes care of their family member and they take them to hospice and they care for them, they feel like they've done a disservice to their family because they allowed them to kill themselves.
Well, and you know what else? A lot of people are saying, for example, well, I don't want to stay home if I can't take care of myself. I want to go into a nursing home. And I think – haven't you ever been in a nursing home?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
They're very difficult places to exist. But the reason people say that is because they're afraid that their children will reject them.
Right.
And they
Which happens frequently.
Yeah. They can't bear the pain of that rejection. So they convince themselves, I want to go to a nursing home or I want to die. In our family, we have four siblings and my mother, Connie, and Pops, Al. And we tell my mother that if she ever can't take care of herself, then between the four kids, we'll get together and draw straws, or we're going to have a pool. We're going to put in so much money, and whoever wins then gets to care for my mom, and she gets the money.
Well, that's good.
Right?
I always tell my kids between the three of them, they should be able to care for me. They can rotate me every quarter, whatever they want to do, but I'm not going to the home.
Oh.
And they know that.
Yeah. And so
but we have everyone in society institutionalized. We have daycare. We have public school. We have adult daycare. We have programs for disabled people where somebody else watches them all day. We have nursing homes.
We have the correctional facility.
We have
2 million
facilities.
People.
Exactly.
And so what's happening is society and Christians are buying into this fully. That it's a good thing to institutionalize our parents when they get old, our grandparents. And so the grandparents, they're growing up in that culture, and they realize my kids are going to expect that they don't have to take care of me.
Yeah.
And I can't bear the rejection of them saying, Dad, this is too much on us. We're not going to do it. So I want to go to a nursing home, and I don't want to be resuscitated, which is all so tragic.
Right. And interestingly, when you bring up parents afraid of being rejected, the baby boomers were the ones that were pushing for legislation that they'd be able to have up to 6 months off and not lose their job under the Family Medical Leave Act. I have yet to see one of them take it to care for their family.
Oh, my.
Now, if you're Hispanic, you are going to be better off because your family will take care of you. If you're Vietnamese or some other Asian culture, they will take care of their family. But when it comes to white, middle, and upper-class people, they will dump their mom in a nursing home 10 times out of 10.
Wow.
It's very hard. They I have to work. I have to work.
How about a Denver Bible church? You see, one difference is we are teaching, and we've been teaching since we've been a church. And I've been teaching since we've been on the air, going on 15 years, that God says to honor your mother and your father, and that doesn't mean that when they need to be cared for, you dump them in a nursing home. And you go in and they give you a tour and they say, what a wonderful place this is. And over the years, I've gone in dozens of times to nursing homes to visit people, to minister, to put on shows for them. We used to have one woman, an atheist, call into the show and she hated God and she's at a local nursing home. And so my kids and I would go in and we'd play chess in her room just because she wanted company. Even though she hated God, she liked us. And then we helped her get out of the nursing home and get established on her own.
Oh, that's good.
Which she was thrilled for. But Christians are growing up with this belief that the government will pay for mom and dad to go into a nursing home. So that's what should happen.
And then they'll complain about how all the money is going to be used up and there won't be any left for them because the nursing home care is going to use up whatever money is there.
Right.
And they'll complain about it.
Right.
Instead of saying, mom has, you know, so many thousands of dollars. Why don't I take off work for 6 months and she can help me out with some of my bills and I'll take care of her.
Wow.
But nobody wants to do that. Everybody's so married to their job. It's insane.
Well, to their job, to
just the whole idea of working. And the fact that we've lost mothers staying at home, which, you know, back in the day, that's who would take care of mom when she was sick because she was already at home with the kids. But now that we don't have that anymore and mom's working too and we're so in debt, it takes two incomes to keep going. People aren't going to take the time off to care for anybody.
And that's why we encourage people. It's not a sin for a woman or a mother to go to work, but we encourage families, if at all possible, if mom could stay home, she will be thrilled and the kids will be better off and it'll be a stronger family.
Right. I almost wonder, though, if liberal public schools tie into the whole thing, because first of all, they tell everybody that you can't discuss something unless you're in that area, like what Michael did, or that you've been a mile in their shoes. They're constantly making you decide that you need to think of what it would be like to be that person.
Right.
And so that freaks people out. Once they start doing that all the time, then that's how they see things. And they think, well, if I was like Terry Schiavo, I'd want somebody to get rid of me.
Right. I've had people tell me that, liberals, Christians, ignorant Christians, I don't want to put this burden on my family. Mm-hmm. So the response I've used, and other people in the audience have picked this up, and they've used it with their relatives, is say, Dad, you're asking me to kill you. And that's a far greater burden on me and our family than caring for you.
Yeah, that's great.
So I'm going to love you. If you might find someone else who will kill you, but not here, not in my household.
Yeah, that's a great thing to say. Mm-hmm. I've told patients when they say that, I ask them, well, if your daughter was paralyzed tomorrow, would you still care for her? She's 40 years old. And they tell me yes. And I said, it's no different.
It's no different.
Family is family.
Right.
We're supposed to be there to care for each
and
other.
And it's even one of the Ten Commandments, to honor your mother and your father. Yet is it – you've been – Maria, you're a RN for 10 years, but you're also a Christian. Have you listened to Christian radio and TV on and off for some years? Are you somewhat familiar?
Been a Christian for 6 years, so yeah, I've been listening to it. And okay. I used to be a liberal, so.
Have you heard much of Christians being taught to care for their parents when they're old? Do you hear that? Is that part of – what's taught in Christian radio, or do you not hear that?
I didn't hear it in my last church very much, and I listened to Dobson a lot, and he had his mother in some place, even though his wife was a stay-at-home mom. You know, he did some shows about caring for the elderly, but it talked a lot about living wills and end-of-life decisions and placement and stuff like that. I didn't get that impression.
It's something we need to do. We need to remind people that honoring your mother and your father is part of what God wants from us. And as we teach that, that will oppose the cultural push to institutionalize everyone at the end of their lives.
Right.
So, Maria, thank you so much for joining us. Can we do another show?
Yeah.
In fact, you know when I'd like to do it? Because you've got so many issues about hospice and all. Can we do it tomorrow?
Sure.
All right, we'll do that. And I want to tell you, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, simply the best Christian school I've ever seen. Check them out, K-12, Maranatha. What a school, Maranatha.